know that everyone will be receiving if you give us your email address. We will be able to send you out an email in the beginning of the week with the designated literature that will be used for that week. So the United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So we want to just remind everybody about today's class. The topic is Fundamental Principles of Theosophy. And there are two volunteers that will be sharing for the panel.
Your own gallery.
Okay, so in today's class, the Fundamental Principles of Theosophy, rather than just reciting what those principles are, we're going to go a little further into the sentence on the declaration, which is, you know, the purpose of the lodge is to disseminate the fundamental principles, to share the ideas, but also to exemplify and practice. So we're going to talk about what do you do with theosophy once you start feeling that you're grounded in these ideas and testing it and checking it to see if it is a good basis by which to live. So we're going to investigate just a little bit of that, and then we'll open the floor to questions and contribution and new ideas. And when we do that, please, when you ask questions, indicate which of the panelists you're directing the question to, okay? And then the other one may chime in as well, but that's helpful. Okay, so the first we're going to talk about is, it's an idea that people ask a lot when they come into the lodge. You know, what is the relationship of the lodge of theosophy to political reforms? How involved do we get? Things like this are very important to the world. Theosophy must be involved with that. And the answer to the question is really no, not so much. But why? Well, very definitely, the lodge invites all people to investigate theosophy. As a center of theosophy in Philadelphia, we have folks from all walks of life, all races, creeds, sex, condition, organization. So we all have different views about the world in its cycles and in its comings and goings. But we are here to investigate fundamental principles of life, which we are all interested in common. And if we weren't, we wouldn't be associated with it. But we're here to investigate the principles. And then by all means, the invitation for each individual is to take this and go out into your world and our world and apply these ideas as you see fit, wherever you may, whatever religion you participate in, you'll see theosophical principles there. Whatever organizations you may belong, you will find opportunities to validate some of the things they're doing or to question some of the things they're doing based on what you see as true. So, as the political issues vary with circumstances and idiosyncrasies of the individual, students of theosophy, are left, what we just said, are left to follow each individual line of thought. Now, we as students are all sadly aware that in countries all over the world, the social condition of large masses, wherever, can really render conditions impossible to deal with in heart, mind, and hand. This being the case, very much so, the very ability to develop as a person when subject to these conditions can be stunted. Now, the development actually of the individual in heart, mind, and application is what theosophy is all about. these are the objects of theosophy. The lodge is in thorough sympathy and harmony with all true efforts in this direction to assist mankind to develop and grow spiritually, mentally, physically healthy. All right. So what are the principles that are used in the course of life that theosophy finds so universal that they can be applied in every circumstance, wherever the student of theosophy may find himself? Well, HPB, one of the founders of the theosophical movement in the 19th century, teaches what we call the four links of the golden chain, the four links of the golden chain. And they are what bind humanity into one family. And they are universal unity and causation, human solidarity, karma, and reincarnation. So what is that? What is that universal unity and causation? We'd like to take a minute and look at that. This is universal unity is the demonstration of the infinite interconnectedness of all life. Universal unity, also you'll hear the word universal brotherhood, which you could imagine the idea of the infinite interconnectedness of all of life. And it's correlated. Man's universal relationship to all other men in cause and effect, in karma. Now, there are always two sides of a social coin. When we have social challenges, there's on the one side, the neglect of social duty for those who are in a position of helping. We're not saying everybody who's in a position doesn't help, but there are those who could do more. And then this is connected, because there is the neglect of duty, this is also connected with the stunted development of those who could grow more and learn more if the opportunities were created by changing conditions. It's action and interaction. It's brotherhood and sisterhood. We all live for and live with each other. This is one of the fundamental theosophical principle that binds every theosophist, not only just to disseminate the principles, to teach them, so to speak, academically, but to carry it out in individual life. So, all good and evil in humanity has its root where? In the human character. The human character is conditioned by an endless chain of cause and effects, all of which we are responsible for. We individually are responsible for our own karma, and collectively, as a human race, we are all in it together for the racial karma. Therefore, theosophists see themselves as bound to do the utmost to help by all means in his power to support, in terms of political reforms, a student of theosophy would see it proper to support wise and well-considered social effort, which has for its purpose the improvement of the conditions of the sufferer. Wise and well-considered social issues, whose purpose is the improvement of the condition of the suffering. These efforts should be made with a view to their ultimate, this is what it is, the ultimate emancipation and development of personal responsibility of those who are suffering, so they can grow and learn and take responsibility for themselves and live happy, self-determined lives. Okay, so that's a big statement. wise, well-considered social efforts. It's not saying support anything and everything that you see on TV. How do we know whether a social effort is wise or unwise? Well, one general test might be, will that the proposed action tend to promote brotherhood among all who are involved with it? That's the aim of theosophy. The aim of theosophy is to demonstrate the reality of universal brotherhood. And we would support any political, the student is invited to consider supporting any social reform in that direction toward universal brotherhood. Now, some people say, well, yeah, people have problems. I have problems. We all have problems. But isn't that their karma? Aren't they entitled just to take on whatever the challenges are? Well, yes, there's individual karma, but there's also what we call racial karma, the karma of the human race. And we all participate in that. Remember, universal unity and causation. What we find around us is what we helped to create by what we did or did not do in this life and past lives. So to that extent, it is our responsibility, to the degree that we can have, to raise all of life to recognize who they are, what they can be, to take responsibility and move in that direction, all with the idea of social emancipation for them to be able to lead a healthy, developed life. We all need this. Well, therefore, and HBB tells us, in helping on the development of others, I'm quoting HBB, in helping on the development of others, the theosophist believes that he is not only helping them to fulfill their karma, but that he is also, in the strictest sense, fulfilling his own. So, just to finish up then, the question could be asked, what does this all have to do with reincarnation? Our present lives depend on the development in this life of germs that had not, of seeds that had not germinated in past lives, or to fulfill in this life things we began in previous lives that need to be brought to fruition. This is the law as regards the future. Universal causation, though, is not just the present. Universal causation, in participating and recognizing our participation in universal causation, this has to do with the past and the present and the future. And to reach into all three, we say you have to kind of live in that part of yourself, which is in eternity, to see for oneself, as best we can, the effects of our actions in the future, and know what those effects are going to be, and then wisely take action as we see fit along those lines. So every unselfish deed, is a stepping stone to the higher, more glorious planes of being, of the development spiritually of the individual. If this life was the only life, then in many respects, it's a horrible life for a lot of folks, for most of us, and always has been for mankind, but there are opportunities to grow through. If we regard this life as a preparation for the next stage of whatever life brings us above and beyond where we are now, then this life can be used to learn and grow in situations to create, so to speak, a golden gate through which we pass, not selfishly, not by ourselves, but together with all of our fellow human beings, with all of humanity into the place where eventually we all will get there together. So this is the idea, ideas to consider as regards social reforms and our participation with mankind. Now we have another application or two to talk about.
So we'll be taking a look at the ideas of duty and charity. And in the light of those golden links that were mentioned, and just to reiterate, they are universal unity and causation, human solidarity, the law of karma, and reincarnation. So the heading for this month's topics was the ancient wisdom religion. So when we're looking at this idea of fundamental principles of theosophy, how does it fit in with ancient wisdom religions? And we just want to put out just a quick note regarding that, is that theosophy, if one looks at the philosophy, can be taken back to ancient times, like with Pythagoras, Socrates, you know, going all the way back to the ancient philosophers. And basically, it is the same ideas, the same philosophy as today. And these ideas of universal unity, human solidarity, karma, and reincarnation have been brought forward from ancient times. So this is one of the ideas with theosophy being the wisdom religion, in that it has been brought forward, these ideas. So duty and charity. I mean, those are big topics. They're very big in the philosophy. They come up and are discussed a lot. And one of the questions we would put forth to the group today is, is it one's duty to be charitable? Now, the way most people think of charity is something that basically is, this, everybody thinks of it the same way, pretty much. But when we, as we go through this talk, we will see that theosophy has a very different idea, very different take on charity and duty. I mean, we all feel as though we have a duty. We have a duty to, if we have children, to clothe them, feed them, you know, proper health care, that sort of thing. But what about duty to our fellow man? We're looking at universal unity and causation and human solidarity. Where does unity fit in with that? We want to read a quote for those of you who aren't familiar with the Bhagavad Gita, which is an ancient small text full of interesting ideas. It's just, and the Bhagavad Gita talks a lot about doing one's duty and doing your duty without expecting anything in return, doing it because it needs to be done. And the first speaker was talking about karma and reincarnation. And the whole idea with duty in regards to karma and reincarnation is that we have our choice whether to do our duty and base it on, well, what is somebody going to think of me if I help them? That type of thing. But no, theosophy says you do it because it needs to be done. It has been brought forward from past lives, from your reincarnation, And it was, you chose to do this. And if it's coming to you, you need to do it. And it has to be done without expecting anything in return. So the quote here from the Bhagavad Gita, it says, the performance of the duties of a man's own particular calling, although devoid of excellence, is better than doing the duty of another, however well performed. And he who fulfills the duties obligated by nature does not incur sin. A man's own natural duty, even though stained with faults, ought not to be abandoned. Basically, what is being said here is that one should do one's own duty, no matter how fault, and you know, all the faults that are in the performance of that duty, it's better than doing somebody else's duty without having any faults. So when the Bhagavad Gita talked about natural duties, those are the duties that are coming to us under law. Law meaning karma and reincarnation and cycles, that we created this duty to come to us in this life. Everything we do is done in conjunction with others, which is an example of universal brotherhood. So the duty that we are doing has to be done in conjunction with other people. So the difference, so when we look at these four ideas, so what's the difference between human solidarity and universal unity? Our thought on that is that universal unity can cause human solidarity, causing people to come together. We like to say that there is unity in diversity, that it doesn't matter what somebody's past was, you know, because they are in your life now. It doesn't matter about what type of background they have, what country they or their families are from, what race they are, what kind of place they live in. It doesn't matter, because we are all spiritual beings. We are all rays of that deific essence. And as such, we have that spark of deity. We are that spark of deity that are in us. And because of that, it binds us together in that great idea of universal brotherhood, universal unity. And universal unity isn't just the human kingdom. We're looking at all the lower kingdoms, animal, plant, and mineral. They all have a spark. Granted, they are at different levels, and certainly that spark is not as shiny as it is in the human kingdom, but they are all spiritual beings. And it, as was said, it binds us all together. So why do we need to be reborn? What is this whole idea of reincarnation? And it's giving us a chance to get it right. Some people will say, oh, how can you believe in reincarnation? It's like, I don't want to do this over again. But the thing is, we need to do it over again until we get it right, until we become perfected beings. adepts, masters, chelas, those types have kept at it life after life. So duty gives to us our choice whether to accept that duty to help others and how to perform it. So when the duty comes to us, then we do it, we don't grumble, and we do it not expecting anything in return, and we do it because it's something that needs to be done, and it is to be done for others, not us. So this is a quote from The Key to Theosophy by H.P. Blavatsky. So when she's talking about duty, she says, duty is that which is due to humanity, to our fellow men, neighbors, family, and especially that which we owe to all those who are poor and more helpless than we are ourselves. Now, we will be talking about charity, and this is why we started off our talk about, is our duty charity? Do we need, you know, are they combined? This is a debt which, if left unpaid during life, leaves us spiritually insolvent and moral bankrupt in our next incarnation. Theosophy is the quintessence of duty. So that quote leads us into this whole idea of charity then. So is it our duty to be charitable? But it has, if we're going to be charitable, it needs to be the proper type of charity. So the dictionary says charity can be an organization to help provide and raise money for those in need. It can be the voluntary giving of help, typically in the form of money, to those in need. It can be help or money given voluntarily to those in need. And it can be kindness and tolerance in judging others. So, is it our duty to be charitable? Theosophy considers giving personally, not to an organization, the right and proper way to donate. Often money and goods goes in, and we know this is true because we, especially during an unsettled period in the world like now, after a catastrophic weather event, we know that people complain that the goods that were supposed to reach these people affected were not getting there, that other people were taking them. So often goods and money go into others' pocket rather than those who need it. And a very good quote from The Key to Theosophy again is on charity, and this is the idea that will make it very different than what most people think of when we speak of, excuse us, when we speak of charity. HPB says, act individually and not collectively. Follow the Northern Buddhist precepts. Never put food into the mouth of the hungry by the hand of another. Now, they're not saying don't give food, but the idea there shouldn't be a middle person. You shouldn't give food to one person to give to somebody else. It should be done personally. Never let the shadow of thy neighbor or a third person come between thyself and the object of thy bounty. Never give money to the needy or food to the priest who begs at thy door through thy servants. So again, we're not saying not to give to these people, but it shouldn't have an intermediary. It says, lest thy money should diminish the gratitude and thy food turn to gall. So this is a very different idea when it comes to charity. Our question that we want to put forth to folks, maybe we can answer it during class, is considering like the fires and the hurricanes that are going on. One person cannot help, like especially when it was in Hawaii. What we can't get over to Hawaii and give $50 to somebody. So what is being done then is where organizations, charity organizations, are collecting things from those of us that are unable to do it singly. So is that right, according to what is being said by HPB, or is it not? Which is, you know, how do we function with that? So let's look at that and see what we can come up with that. So we think that we are finished, and we already have a hand up here in Theosophy Hall. Go ahead.
Well, and who are you asking the question of?
I'm answering the question that was just asked.
Oh, great.
Ah, good.
I'm trying to. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll confuse things even more. So, panelist number two. About giving, it's really very interesting, as we think that in today's world, which has changed in some ways, has changed very little as far as personalities go, but it's changed a lot when it comes to technology, quite a lot, hugely. Now, as far as the giving to places and far, far away places, Hawaii is part of the United States, so it's not a foreign country. There's such a thing as GoFundMe, and organizations that take little or nothing administratively can do a lot of good. So we think that's one advance, and we're not going to take a plane there because that'll contribute to whatever, climate change, global warming, whatever you want to call it. So we don't do that. It's much more efficient, we think. And this is just one student's idea. For instance, GoFundMe and help.
Yeah, so the idea of starting a GoFundMe account, which is probably the safest way to donate. JCS?
Oh, could I jump in here for a second?
Excuse us one second.
So we could book a charity from different levels. You know, this bit about just giving money is completely material. It's not the wrong thing to do. But we think perhaps HPV is talking there, you know, what are we doing for that other person, belly to belly, when we're offering help of whatever kind, when we're telling them, you know what, I know where you're coming from, been there, done that, how can I help? Or how much do you need? You know, I appreciate where you are, things will get better. How much are we doing for his heart and his mind and encouraging him? Perhaps that's the issue. And for the person who's giving, how much better does one feel when one overcomes the fear of walking up to a stranger and actually doing it. A lot of people are afraid to do that. But when we get through that and actually do it, we grow in certain ways ourselves. So this idea of charity, we think with HPD, it's charity on many different levels. By no means would theosophy say, you know, don't contribute money to good causes when you can't be there. But there's a lot to be said for doing it personally. Yes.
JCS.
Yeah. Before we advertise for any particular giving stream, this student would strongly recommend that somebody looks into, each of us looks into fees that are associated with the donations and the costs of the administration versus what actually lands in the charity. So having said that, hoping to negate any kind of commercialism, one of the comments made this morning that's really very, very important is the notion of charity beginning at home. That the duties for us to sustain life, to empower life and the efforts of others, come into our sphere of influence in a very mundane, subtle way, day after day, moment by moment. And as we attend to those with pure motives, making every effort one-on-one to empower the other, wisdom will grow in our hearts on how then to extend that sphere of influence beyond the commercial, beyond the material, from our immediate vicinity to a worldwide effect. But we've got to be very, very cautious and read into HPB's directions and then examine that in our individual heart of hearts.
SL?
In light of this, the first speaker mentioned that many in a position of opportunity neglect to do what they should. And of course, in terms of charity, we're all in an opportunity, but we might not because of apathy or carelessness. So we think HPB's suggestion is to make us more, first of all, so that we should not be apathetic. We should be charitable, but also to be careful, to be intelligent about it. Because if we take this literally, we would not give charities, we would not give charity to organizations that help whales or help suffering animals or help the protection of species, because they can't feel, they wouldn't feel gall. They wouldn't feel ingratitude if we didn't give it to them personally. So we have to look at a higher principle, a theosophical principle behind our charity, and not be necessarily so literal about the words.
Thank you. And we do have a person. Here it is. We do have a chat. We think of the dozens of trucks packed with humanitarian aid who are being barred from crossing the Palestinian border to help innocents experiencing genocide. In this case, charitable intent is ineffective if only financial slash material.
So,
yes, in light of that chat, in her message to the American Theosophists, she says that it is the role of Theosophists to arouse charitableness, all those good qualities in human nature, to make us truly human through the spread of these ideas, these principles. And if we accomplish that true charity and duty, then proper deeds of physical charity in all directions would naturally follow. So, yes, the individual efforts are important, but the real duty, the real charity, the real work is to try to arouse, to nurture, to encourage that natural charitableness in our true nature.
Thank you. JCS.
So extending that comment into another point for questioning and discussion, what might first appear as a kind of self-centered pursuit where a novice student, even a student of many decades standing, might appear selfish to the folks in their immediate surround because they might be pursuing a particular practice of meditation and periods of study and attending Zoom sessions. But all of those little efforts that really are only reflective of efforts going on within the heart and the soul, each of those efforts within radiate out, hopefully will be understood by others, and hopefully will energize others to pursue the same path. And so ultimately speaking, if we take the fundamental principles of this philosophy and really use them as inspiration and as inspiring, then it is potential in unity around the world that this inspiration will become universal, regardless of any tragedies that we see unfolding right now. Perhaps we can see them as growing pains toward a better and more universal source of charity, not one that is self-centered and selfish, but rather is self-centered and selfless.
One of the ideas that comes through with the philosophy is the fact that thoughts have power, and that if we feel as though there's nothing that we can do, there is something that we can do. We can, what we say, people the astral with positive thoughts, with love and compassion, because those feelings will go out into the universe, for whatever, for the lack of a better term, it will spread out to and affect people. And like was just said with the comment, it's like people will notice how we do act differently because of these ideas. And so we can do something. We can be charitable. We can be compassionate with our family, our neighbors, our friends, with anybody that we run into. Taking a minute or two to talk with a homeless person, smiling at people you're standing next to at the bus stop. So there is a lot we can do just ourselves.
In the back?
This is for the first panelist. It was mentioned about, we don't want to misquote you, but something about horrible conditions. And we were just, once you phrase it the way you said it, yes, they definitely are out there, they exist. So what do we do about it? I mean, personally, and also on a more global scale.
So yeah, we don't quite remember exactly the word that the adjective we use, but conditions that keep people confined or strip folks of opportunities in their own hearts and minds for growth, for intellectual and spiritual growth, let alone for physical health, you know? So the point here is, yes, political reforms are important. Yes, involve ourselves as we see fit in the direction of helping people to help themselves and grow as people and learn. That was the point of it. How do we do it? Well, on the one hand, you know, there are leaders and there are followers. And so if we're not sure exactly how to get it rocking, we can go look for the right place, the right people, the right opportunity, and get involved and assess for ourselves. And who knows what happens over time within one's own heart. We meet people, we see opportunities, and before you know it, we realize, you know, this needs to be done. And I'm in a place where I can do it. So rather than, you know, intellectual, we don't have to intellectualize it. Just we need to get out and do it. That's the exemplification in practice. Let's go find somewhere where we can contribute. And as we do, it's not to say if we find some flaw in it to hit the, you know, to walk, but maybe to bring about certain ideas within the movement. Wow, don't you think you're kind of couching it toward only people who like what you like or people who, why don't we come, you know, open the doors here. Maybe there's ways that we can be of greater assistance. We never know who will be able to help if we don't go out and try. And probably more than one student has found that it's amazing what can happen when you put these ideas in action, especially when people start catching on. It's kind of a neat thing. We know, having been a teacher in Philadelphia and trying this once or twice, nothing crazy, but it was amazing the way kids in high school light up when you talk briefly about karma. And they want to close the textbooks and jump right in on it. And so people are open to it. The message here is, you know, used to be in the early days of theosophy, people didn't know what karma was. In the 1960s, only hippies knew what karma was. Today, karma, hippies like her. but today, the only problem about karma today, it's not that nobody knows it, everybody knows it, but there's a lot of folks out there who have a misunderstanding of what it is. So at the very least, as we interact with folks, we can help them understand a little more clearly the way karma works in terms of its universal application. Let's face it, karma is known as the spiritual doctrine, the doctrine of responsibility. When we know that what goes around really does come around, when we know that what is in my lap today, I really did create, and it's something we have to prove to ourselves, then there's a certain personal responsibility that one is inclined to take in living his life the whole way. And that's all part of spiritual mental development. Yes, JCS.
There was a very brief headline this morning, and goodness only knows it's dangerous to run with headlines. But a national leader was quoted as saying that there are walls among us, in particular among Christians, where the walls have been put up because the people inside the wall are so very loved. And, you know, when we look at it, an outtake like that, it was a blip, it was a headline, don't know the context, don't know the full statement. But what struck this mind was, wow, you know, when universal principles are misapplied, they can put up walls, they can in the most innocent of ways, develop a scenario that's the antithesis of universal brotherhood and unity, even though the thinking appears to be from the heart and appears to be based on an attitude of love or charity. So there's an invitation when we're working with the people of the world, when we're working with our own personalities, to constantly invite and reinforce introspection. Look at motives, look at mixed motives, consider the motives, consider response versus reaction, so that walls don't go up, so that we're protecting only those we love inside the walls. It's really, really crucial that that's part of the empowering process, this sense of the divine can be introspective in the midst of the human experience.
That is one of the ideas. If we take to heart that idea that we are all spiritual beings, that we all are a spark of the divine, not just the chosen few, but all of us, that whole idea of universal brotherhood, of unity and diversity, or diversity in unity. You forgot that one, but anyway, it binds us all together, and that is one of the things that we can keep in mind when looking at those headlines about walls, is that no, we are all rays of the divine, not just a few, and to keep in mind that is, that's one of the ways that we can break down those walls and know that we are all together and that we're really no different from each other because we all have that spiritual aspect to our being. SL?
Sometimes the topic of meditation comes up in relation to theosophy, and no doubt there are some that use that meditation as an opportunity for their own spiritual growth. But one thing we read about meditation from a theosophical perspective, it's our opportunity to perform our duty and charity to ourselves, to take a certain amount each day in our meditation to examine ourselves and how pure we are in our thought, in our feeling, in our spiritual nature. And their duty, if we're not, our duty there is to clean it up for ourselves, but also an opportunity to weed out the uncharitableness in our own nature and may take an active role in nourishing everyday charitable thoughts. So charity begins at home. Well, that initial home is within ourselves, and we can all do that every day or even twice a day in terms of our meditation.
Thank you.
So we're coming to a close, and we would just like to mention that what we study here, the philosophy of theosophy, is the ancient philosophy that can be found in all civilizations and all religions from the ancient world, brought forward, lost, found as the cycles go on. So what theosophy is today is a reintroduction of the ancient wisdom religion, kind of a new cycle that's been brought, which has been made worldwide. You can find theosophical lodges all over the world. And the point here is that what we share here is our best ability to present the philosophy as it's been taught to us. So there's no new revelation here. There's no one who claims it as their own, but rather just those who pass on the ideas as it's passed on, as it has been passed on to them. So thank you for coming. We appreciate it. And we look forward to Wednesday evening, the Ocean Theosophy class.
Bye. Bye, everybody.